Excuse me.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome to our final seminar. Remember, if you can hang around at the top of the hour, we can have a discussion of things that we didn't get to or things you just want to talk about for just a bit of time. I reviewed some of the comments that you've sent in. Thanks again for sending in all the suggestions and the things that you would like to be sure we cover. And I want to address a couple that I see recurring that I don't think we've done enough of a development on, and one of those is to look at what is it that may be different about wellness coaching than coaching other people and other things. Can I get a management while we have open mic of the background noise so that, because I want to hear any responses you have. First, mentor coaching is not really different or distinct in terms of wellness. We still deal with helping someone to create the very best story that they can in whatever way possible. We construct a coaching conversation with the same kind of creation of a plan and a strategy. Could you hit a mute button or star six if you haven't, until you're ready to talk, because there's a bit of a distraction. I can go to lecture mode, but I'd rather leave it open if we can do this. So it may be helpful to simply incorporate the whole question of well-being into your coaching conversation. What do you do for your self-care? Do you work out? Do you just open the possibility? A related question and a component of that was, what's the most common thing that someone gets stuck in? How can you motivate someone? And here's the convergence of a response to all the above. First, and we've talked about this previously here, you don't need to be motivated to do something. All you need is a plan and to stick to it. This is what we specialize in, is to help someone create a system. If you want to change, focus on the system. To help someone each coaching session and to create that conversation of coaching in that story for that session, you want to create a map of looking at where someone is, where they want to go, and how to measure progress along the way for that specific conversation. So when someone is working with you, what's their plan? Do they have a plan? And we'll talk a little bit later about the difference between a good idea and a plan. And to help someone create a plan, we're going to talk more about how to do that, but I just want to give you a heads up that there are some specific things that I have in mind to discuss to elaborate a bit more about that question. And you've seen the needs and ideals questionnaire in the workbook. Those are two fundamental aspects of understanding someone's fundamental needs and their core ideals or values, their identity. And that's important to incorporate what they do, including their goals with you, including how they come to revise the model of who they are as they're working with you to incorporate those changes to make it permanent. because we always revert to our core identity. So unless we help someone change their basic operating model, their identity, to incorporate what has been done in coaching, it won't stick. Someone will revert back. Now, we also have, and I'm getting a great idea. You guys have sent in some terrific summaries of what you're taking away, and I'm impressed. Janet has a vignette of three or four sentences that I want to spend a little bit of time at the end on, because I think there's some really important principles in her observation and question. So if she's here, I want her to present this. If she is not able to be here, she's also given me permission just to read that and comment on it, because it has to do with learning and unlearning, which is a big portion of learning something new and different, is unlearning. So that is right on up there with a plan. So questions, comments, anything you want to be sure we incorporate in our final seminar, or just to respond to right now? Questions, comments, clarifications from anyone? Well, again, I appreciate all the responses that you've sent in, the summaries and the initial questions and what you want to cover. I'm hoping that we have incorporated that into our discussion. If not, hang around. Let me know, and we'll address that more specifically at the end of the seminar. So unless there's a comment or a question, I'm going to put us on lecture mode, and we're going to complete this series and then have a discussion at the end, at the top of the hour. Okay, we're in lecture mode now. So for our final seminar, we're going to talk about creating new wellness experiences and identity. Now, we've discussed the power of story, the concept of creating your own wellness story. We've looked together at how different this notion of creating your own story is from fitting into someone else's protocol, telling them what to do, giving them information or data, adding a diet plan, adding an exercise program to what someone does. This is our fundamental working modality in mentor coaching, is to create a collaborative framework with the client's story as point of reference and developing that story so they take ownership of it. We've discussed the five steps in the roadmap in constructing that story. Understanding it, revising it, constructing a new one perhaps. Recognize authorship, own the story, assess the plot and the storylines, decide what to change, and map changes. Now, step 6 and 7 will address how to create new wellness experiences and identity. So these 7 steps are about either the deconstruction to understand and revise a story, or the steps to create a new wellness story, or some combination. So step 6, author new experiences. Now, we trust our stories. They're our reality. When our stories and our behaviors don't fit, we experience disharmony. We have to change one or the other to restore harmony. Sometimes we revise our stories. Sometimes we change how we see reality. Now, we've considered if your wellness story doesn't allow you to do certain things. If your story is that you're a procrastinator, it will disallow you from finishing early. If your story says you don't know how to work out, you'll live out this assumption. Remember, it's not there until you create it. It's a construction. So that's important. At first, the idea of change may create excitement or anticipation. Then, when it's on the cusp of action, a kind of uncertainty or anxiety. Then, expansion. And finally, mastery. So these are simple AAA principles of change to author a new story. The three A's: awareness, acceptance, and action. One, you're writing, and this is in your outline, you're writing your own story. Is it working? So for each component, what are the results? Is it working? Honestly assess each storyline and make it a yes or no. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. Your business or career story. Your relationship story. Your money story. When I ask people what they most look forward to and what they're most afraid of for the next chapters of their lives, they often respond with vague dreams, yet specific fears. The top of the list of long-term concerns for the majority of people: health and money. A not-so-secret to success is you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, or experience. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you still have to pay in some way. For example, if you incur debt in order to purchase something before you've earned the money, you simply end up paying more for it. Another non-secret: people who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who can find a way to enjoy paying the price. This makes it easy to pay. The price is whatever you need to give in order to generate exactly what you want. I'm doing this right now. I love this. I think you're each going to make a difference in so many lives. Think about how much you enjoy your coaching experience when you provide benefits. Two, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story. Positive or negative, based on past, present, future, adaptive or maladaptive, the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as abundance. You create the energy and give power to your story. Now, here's a subtle but crucial distinction. You give specific power to your story, and it assumes its own momentum. Now, remember, you're not the subject of that process. You're the creator of it. And remember, we talked about in the first seminar, whatever you think and feel and experience, you create each moment. So here's a really short list of some results when you focus on what you don't want: fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt. Three, you're writing your own story. Decide specifically what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is they're not quite sure what they want. So here's a neuroscience law of attraction question. How does the brain work like a travel agent? Remember back in the day? The first two questions a travel agent asks: where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? So that becomes like MapQuest. You program in where you want to go, you make a map, and then you proceed in a timely way. Now, a caveat: to know what not to do is at least as important as knowing what to do. You may not always know what the next right thing is, but you can almost always know what it isn't. And here's a related aspect. What you resist, you draw toward you. Resistance is an engagement in itself. It's it's analogous to saying anger is as passionate an attachment as love, at least. Now, most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor. They aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. Four, you're writing your own study, your own story. Do you have specific measurable goals? And this is a prototype study. There have been many since. In a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s, 10 to 15% of the Harvard Business School graduates had a vision and specific goals for their life and business. 5 decades later, that 10 to 15% had over 90% of the assets of the entire group. Many studies since have replicated that. Motivation, here's also what we know. Motivation increases as soon as you're clear about the goal and the payoff, and it enhances as you get closer to the goal. So focus enhances when you have a specific plan and strategy. So I'd suggest reviewing in the workbook the exercise 11 Steps to Ignite Success. Begins on page 3.6 of the workbook. It's estimated that about 10% of people have measurable goals, but 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal, the two travel agent questions, measurement and time, where and when. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose some weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by 5 p.m. September 30th, 2024. Here's a good idea. I want to save more money for retirement. Here's a goal. I will pay myself first by setting up an automatic transfer from my checking account of $300 to my retirement fund the first day of each month. A good decision you only have to make once. You don't have to debate it every time. So, then write a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, move you to a higher level, sort of like a quantum leap. Getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat Springs, and every October writing in an old home in the French Quarter. But you'll have to substitute your own goals there. Then reread your goals. Regular and breakthrough twice a day, when you wake up and when you go to bed. You're programming your brain, creating a new pathway, and you create a vision. And there's a copy of a chapter about visualization in your workbook. Five, you're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. Now, things can seem large and insurmountable when you look at it from a broad perspective or not focused on a specific step. So you know the experience already. If you feel overwhelmed by the amount of things to do, identify one specific thing that you can do first that will give you some traction. This focus on a simple, specific action creates a sense of effectiveness and initiates a model of mastery. That's the model we're introducing to a client when we do that specific process in a coaching session. Here's an example. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Since he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed to average 24 miles a day, completed the run in 143 days. He was interviewed immediately after he finished the race and asked, how did he manage to keep going when he was exhausted and had still thousands of miles left? His response, I just kept running to the next telephone pole. One step at a time. Now, he knew that the line of telephone poles ended at the end of the Marathon of Hope, but he just did one telephone pole at a time. So divide up your work, focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. Here's another example. During my specialty training in psychiatry, one of my first-year supervisors had a puzzling picture on the wall. It was a photograph in which everything seemed curiously out of focus. I met with him every week. I glanced at the photograph. I had no clue why it was there until finally, toward the end of the year, I mustered enough courage to ask him about it. He said, "Well, look carefully, Dave. What do you see?" I actually walked over to the photograph to get a closer look. I thought there was some magic answer. Closer didn't help. It still seemed out of focus. I didn't see any particular aesthetic value. I had experience in considerable interest in photography. That didn't help. I said, "Steve, the only thing I see is that one branch of one tree is in focus in the entire picture." He said, "Yeah, that's why I have it hanging there. It's my reminder that while things seem confusing and blurry, there's always at least one thing you can have in focus and see clearly," which is why he was a great supervisor for first-year residents. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in the pursuit of your goals. It takes for simple things 25 to 30 days to etch a new pathway in your brain to make it permanent. So write your new story consistently for it to become the default mode. Overall wellness is not based on some big monumental choice, but on little things. If you plan to run 30 minutes on the treadmill, but after 10 minutes, get off, convince you're a little stiff today, it's one small choice, no big deal, but it makes it easier to stop the next time. You resolve to cut empty calories, but then you grab 5 peanut M&Ms from the candy bowl, not really thinking about the choice, because no single M&M, not even 5, has caused anybody to gain weight or have diabetes. And no one experienced a heart attack because of 20 minutes less on the treadmill. Yet our wellness is the cumulative result of thousands of such choices, seemingly innocuous and rationalized away or justified into oblivion. So make the good choices the default mode. We can return to that if you'd like. There's some other examples of that. 7, you're writing your own story. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't working will become evident and self-perpetuating. Now, good parents have known this for centuries. This is simple, but sometimes it takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. We can foster change. We can be a catalyst for our clients developing a new story, a new system to follow. That map for each session, as we've talked before, will help them measure progress step by step. It's a metric of both process and progress. There's a destination, and it helps you know what's detour and what's distraction. Now, you have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses and to write new script for new experience. A new story has to replace the old one. We'll come back to that in the discussion. And there are no shortcuts, since long-term change requires consistent practice, repetition, to groove new neuronal pathways and establish new neural networks. But there are effective and efficient methods to accelerate optimum change, peak performance, and ensure transformation. That's our specialty as professional coaches. 8, you're writing your own story. Ask for feedback to your spouse or partner. On a scale of 1 to 10, would you rate the quality of our relationship? Now, you can ask to your employees or colleagues, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? And then, how can I get to 10? A tribe in southern Africa called the Babemba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that destroys the social net of their tight community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender, and one by one, recite all that that person has done right in his life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest feedback on misbehavior has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of himself or herself and remember who that person is and why they're so important to the life of the village. This may have been the original 360-degree feedback. And notice here the positive framework, not a recitation of all the bad stuff. Now, even without this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way back into alignment with our true selves to get grounded and centered and refocus on needs and ideals. We can get centered and reconnect with our essence. So think about this possibility. Find people who already successfully do what you want and get what you want. Research what they do in order to do your own version of it. Ask, learn, question, but make it your story. Guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's that I stay with problems longer. That was Albert Einstein. How to ask is a crucial factor. Ask clearly, confidently, sincerely. Virginia Satir, the well-known family therapist, was hired by the Michigan State Department of Social Services to submit a program and specifically a proposal on how to restructure the Department of Social Services to better serve their client population. 60 days later, she provided the department with a 150-page report. Their response was twofold. This is the most amazing report, and how did you come up with all these brilliant ideas? She said, well, I just asked all the social workers in your department what it would take for the system to work better. Now, this is a sidebar. You may have noticed that each of these AAA principles of change to author a new story begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first four steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide, condensed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, these 12 action steps. Put it into action. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance instead of waiting for good luck. Luck is defined as probability taken personally, which is to say narcissism meets chance. Now, there's a review of research on goal setting. It's page 3.5 of your workbook that helps understand two essential components, why people give up on goals and how successful and effective goal setting can be long-term achievement and success insurance. 10, you're writing your own story. Take a chance. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get it rejected, you still don't. What do you got to lose? What's the problem? You've spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told repeatedly that he'd never make it. There's already one chiropractor for every 8 people in Carmel. So he went to 12,500 homes, talked to 6,500 people. He asked 3 simple questions. Which location would you recommend I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours between 7 and 9 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the evening? And which newspaper should I advertise in? This was some time ago. He added as he was leaving, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In the first month, he took in $72,500 and netted in his first year over $1 million. 11. You're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. Don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite your story. Cliff Beon was a 61-year-old Australian sheep herder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in his Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him like he was crazy. They said, "You know, this is a race of over 800 kilos. The most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience or equipment?" He said, "Yeah, I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap." When the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained to begin. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. "You're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6. But nobody told Cliff this, so when the other runners were sleeping, he just kept shuffling along. They were asleep and couldn't tell him he wasn't doing it right. He shuffled along for almost 4 days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. Now, we each have beliefs that limit us. "Well, I've got to feel confident before I need to have some experience before I can charge my full fee." Find the story that will improve you and start believing that. If there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? What would your wellness story be? And 12, you're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. For tens of thousands of years before books and computers, we transmitted our essence and principles by story. Story linked to the past, organized the present, and illuminated the future. Story allowed us to connect with each other's humanity in the paths crossed on the long journeys out of Africa to populate the rest of the world. Then the anatomy and physiology of our brains grew by putting thoughts and feelings into stories. Stories informed, instructed, inspired, governed, organized. Story is the most powerful way humans communicate. Story gives birth to possibility. Our brain is a pattern-seeking organ designed to perceive, process, and remember by story. Stories are a way we resonate with our earlier selves, connect with others, and create a roadmap to proceed. Your story is yourself, your life, and what will survive you. At some point in the distant future, all that will be left of you, all that will survive you, is your story. Be sure to get it right. Step 7. Program new identity to incorporate and sustain the changes. Remember, we talked initially about our operating system is 90 to 95% unconscious. Now, this is where we traffic as mentor coaches to help collaboratively understand an operating system and revise the aspects that don't work as well to enhance the ones that do. This is the essence of the roadmap. This is the final step to incorporate those changes into the hard copy, the bedrock of needs, ideals, behavior to identity. Now, even though behavioral patterns, belief systems are downloaded from early on, in the first years of life, before there's words in a language, to operate automatically, they operate without observation or awareness usually. One of the things we do in coaching is to help someone become more empathic with themselves, to self-reflect, to look at and observe and reflect on their own experience, their thoughts, feelings, behavior, to see what works and to enhance what works. We rarely ever observe these behavior patterns and beliefs because they're unconscious as much as we do in mentor coaching, because we're focusing on those and looking together. So here's one of the things that creates a stuckness. We often create two stories simultaneously. The surface story that we run our lives with conscious intentions and aspirations. This is what I want from life. This is my plan. This is Yet the conscious mind is a tiny processor that only operates 5 to 10% of the time, but it's what we have in full awareness. At the same time, there's an unconscious story that ghostwrites behaviors. Sometimes it's in a different direction from this conscious intention. And here's how this shadow story can sound. Well, I can't really get what I want. The system keeps me from doing what I need. I don't think I have what it takes. So it's important that these two stories that are written simultaneously all go in the same direction. Here's another example. I want to claim my freedom and become totally my own person. And the shadow story, well, my partner acts like I'm taking it away when I'm self-sufficient. So look at the surface story, the shadow story, to align those two stories. Here's one organizer for that. Remember, in business, a mission statement is a statement of an organization's primary purpose, the strategies to achieve that purpose, and its fundamental values. A personal mission statement can clarify and provide meaning to your daily activities. It adds focus and commitment, or can, to what you're doing. Now, there are four elements of a mission statement: ideals, purpose, strategies, and goals. Ideals are your values, the core values that motivate and guide you. They define what's important to you. Look at that exercise, the needs and ideals. Pick your top three ideals. Purpose, what you want to accomplish. Purpose needs to be consistent with your ideals so that your energy, your strategy, ideals, and needs all align toward your goal. So it's a successive approximation because you have the map of how to get there. The strategy is the art and science of a plan of action. Just another way of saying exactly this. And remember that goals are specific. Well, they're the SMART goals. You guys know this from early on. Specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, time-bound. So create a personal mission statement. What is your life or professional or both purpose? What are you meant to do? This is the compass to guide your life, including your wellness story, to personal fulfillment. Write yours down. Read it every day. Incorporate it into your wellness story. I'll share mine since you asked. To inspire and guide others to achieve their unique, most empowered life and business stories. Now, there are states of mind patterns. I want to return to that for just a moment. We talked about this before, but a new pattern of behavior can occur for a sustained period of time. Then it may be subjugated into other mindsets. It may create a cognitive fatigue, and you revert back to a comfort zone. So someone who's overweight plans a weight loss program, achieves an ideal body weight, and as soon as that target's released, is reached, that plan is relaxed and the weight's gained back. Then the diet's reinstated. Or the independent business person carries out a set number of hours in a plan each week to do marketing. That plan, meticulously adhered to, results in successful business. But then if it's relaxed and marketing efforts lapse, business wanes, then it's reinstated. Now, in each of these situations, someone has specific motivated attempts and a plan. The process is to stick with the plan. Remember, we talked about you don't need motivation, but you do need a very specific plan, a system, and to stick to it. That's all you need, a plan and to stick to it. So this is important to guide you to create your own compass based on your needs and ideals and to create your story and to be able to assess that story. So here's something to possibly consider in following success trails. Have you said some version of the following? Well, I want to change careers, but I don't know what I do instead. Or I'd really like to get in shape, but I'm not sure where to start. I want to play a bigger game, but I don't even quite know what bigger is. First, decide specifically what you want to do to expand. Then, pick success trails to follow. Seek out a mentor, books, program, or resources, or all the above, to help you. Watch someone who's doing what you might want to do, and as I mentioned, do your version of it. When my good buddy Art heard that I was transitioning from psychoanalytic practice, had completed my professional coaching training, he flew to Houston to take me to dinner. A few years earlier, he left as a senior executive at IBM to start his own corporation, a very successful consulting practice. He told me how he chose five very successful people, asked them to lunch or dinner to pick their brains about what he was about to do. He advised me to do the same. He said, you get to count this as the first one. It worked for both of us. Some business people with instant global recognition have picked his brain for substantial picking fees. So remember with choice enhancement how state of mind is important about getting grounded and centered. Increased tension can produce emotional regression for someone to move back into an earlier pattern. Or emotion can narrow perspective and create tunnel vision and move away from the pathways that generate logic or process logic and reason. And stress can derail balanced, big-picture thinking to focus on the more recent and the more emotionally charged event. Remember, when you're in a state of upset, the first order of business is to regulate feelings to get grounded and centered. Same with your client. When you're relaxed and centered, you have greater access to all of your states of mind, all the information you possess. Here's a quote from a Buddhist teaching. Return to the earth now if your mind is troubled and your heart is uncertain, for it is by returning to the beginning that we can clearly see the path. Return to the earth, get grounded and centered. So, the aspects of change and transition. This is just a very brief over. The change is the event. The situation, you change your behavior, move to a new city, have a baby, take a new job. We focus on change. This is the easy part of coaching. This is where we can apply the work tools, the SMART goals, and the focus. Now, the transition is the process. It's the internal story of change. It's even a change of self-definition to get to this P, program new identity. You let go of the old story, the outlived chapter, and evolve into your new story. This is the P, program new identity to internalize the changes to sustain and enhance them. And remember, Jung said, the psychoanalyst said, the most important problems may not be able to be solved, they just have to be outgrown. This is another way of unlearning and creating something new. So here are the I want to end with a summary of the most frequent mistakes made in writing a new wellness story. This is in your outline too. One, not knowing that you don't know. But how can you know you don't know something? We believe we know, which can blind us to our ignorance. This in turn causes us to be unaware of signs that we may be mistaken. So to know to ask is half the answer. The self-reflection can begin with, what's my plan and is it working? Two, stopping at the first right answer. When we're solving problems or writing a new story, we may stop at the first reasonable action. Now, this may be a correct strategy, but it can stop us from considering other right answers, other correct strategies that could be even more effective. There's an entire book on optimum stopping strategies, because when we make a decision, part of that decision, we know from decision science, is when to optimally stop. For most instances, people stop a little bit too early, but that's a whole other discussion. So ask yourself, and then what? What else? So I want to introduce number three with a very brief quiz. Five frogs sat on a log. They all considered their options. Four, however, planned their strategy, and then they decided they would jump off. So how many frogs were left on the log? Well, five were left because they only planned and decided. They didn't commit to act. Remember, that's the last question we ask someone, and using a coaching model you're probably familiar with, what do you commit to do before we meet again? So the number three is procrastination. Now, I'm talking about some of the broader themes here first, the big patterns, putting off an exercise program, not paying yourself first, not saving for emergency, not saving for retirement, taking care of others but not yourself. Most of us live our lives as if there were an unlimited amount of time left. Now, we know cognitively that there's a finite amount of time, but you don't have necessarily a sense of urgency, and that can contribute to a lack of focus. When the two-minute warning sounds in football, a team sometimes achieves more in that final 2 minutes than they did in the previous 28 of that entire half. The imminent deadline, a limited, finite amount of time to accomplish goal, focuses concentration and increasing effort. In our lives, we only rarely have a two-minute warning. We play as if the notion of finite time is an abstraction. We recognize it, but it's something we don't acknowledge or internalize. Life is finite. It's just that the game clock is invisible. Four, inefficient energy management. Managing energy is a key to success. This begins with knowing your strengths, your limitations, your biological cycle, when you perform best, all within the process of having a system, a map of how to proceed. Know how to enter and exit various states of mind, which works best for a particular task. For instance, writing, editing, two different states of mind, two different parts of the brain, to be done at different times and to sustain the focus and the task of one. Two, cluster activities that require the same state of mind. Identify what enhances your energy, things like anticipation, creativity, pleasure, meditation, prayer, gratitudes. Identify what depletes your energy, toxic people or situations, negative mindset, lack of focus. Five, ambiguity. If you're unclear about what options are available or haven't created specific ones and don't know what it's like to pursue them since you've not done it before, this uncertainty can add to decision paralysis. So often with your clients, you will see what may look like resistance to you, to the process, to their own goal. It may simply be a lack of clarity to not know what the first step is. People are more likely to change when new behavior is crystal clear, not vague or absent. Eating a healthier diet is vague and abstract. The possibilities of eat healthier or save for the future are limitless. Where do you begin? If you want to catalyze change, look at helping your client generate and script specific behaviors. Six, too many choices. This is something that can, the classic study is a study of jams in a supermarket. When six jams were given for tasting, and on alternate weekends, a similar group of people, 24 jams were used to give samples. When only six jams were given, the decisions were easier. There was no choice paralysis. there was 10 times greater purchase of jams when it was very specific and people didn't get that cognitive fatigue of too many choices. So know how to enter and exit various states of mind, which states works best for particular tasks, to reiterate that. So when you look at helping your client choose, recognize that that needs to be specific and circumscribed where there can be a focus applied. Not easy to retreat to the default mode of not making a choice. 7, lack of persistence. The truly challenging, courageous parts of choice are not the initial decision or the initiation of a new order of change. It's the willingness to stay the course. Who said this, do you think? It's a fellow Texan for me. Most people give up when they're about to achieve success. They quit on the 1-yard line. That was Ross Perot. I forgive you for not knowing or remembering who he is because that was a time ago. 8, not following success trails. Now, we talked about that. So, we've talked about the wellness story, your wellness story from perspectives of cells, mind, brain, and story. Now, a final word about genes. Epigenetics is the study of the ways in which our experiences change and shape the way genes operate. Our experiences program how active our genes will be. Now, there's a huge difference in having a gene and that gene expressing its signature proteins to have a particular effect in the vast majority of cases. Of our more than 30,000 genes, some express themselves constantly, some only at a particular time, some only for a certain organ of the body, and some only at certain behavioral or emotional prompts. We now know that our genes and our environment, including our behavior, interact with each other. What we do as well as what we eat can turn genes on or off. Most genes do not operate independently of their environment, internal and external. Our nutrition, our emotions, our social interactions all interact. Let's take a simple example. When you eat broccoli, broccoli contains a form of B6, which prompts a specific enzyme to produce the amino acid L-tryptophan, which contributes to synthesize dopamine. Dopamine is a neurotransmitter that, among other things, stabilizes mood. And for a while after, you get to be proud of yourself, too, besides all the epigenetics. So the residual outcome of your past thoughts, feelings, and actions are not who you are. What you have done with your body and eating may not be your true body self. Who you are is what you're creating this moment. So write your genuine life story, your informed wellness story. Write the truest story possible. A small boy approached Walt Disney to ask him, "How can I be like you one day?" And Disney stopped and took this question very seriously and put his finger in the air, indicating he's thinking about it, hold on. And then, after thinking for a moment, he finally said 4 words. Think, believe, dream, dare. And remember the most important lesson from everything I've said during our time together. This is my summary sentence. Just keep going to the next telephone pole. Now, it's been a privilege to be with you these 4 seminars. I've learned too. I hope you have. I really appreciate your input and suggestions. I hope that it's met your expectations. And I really thank you for your energy and presence and responses. I hope we'll have chances to cross paths and collaborate again. But I want to go to an open mic for discussion now. We talked about possibly extending past the top of the hour if you have questions and things that would be useful to talk about. So I'm going to put us on discussion. so if you'll manage the background noise, what would be most helpful to extend this series of conversation? Questions, clarifications, things that you would like to talk just a bit more about from anything that we've covered.
Hi, David. Janet, this is Danny Bedoni.
Go ahead, please. Sorry, go ahead.
Hi, this is Danny Bedoni. How are you all?
Doing great. Thank you for jumping in. Go for it.
Yes. One of the things that I've been constantly looking at in wellness with our clients is how they want to go back to the principles, how they want to go back to that cellular part. How can we be better coaches from learning about this without knowing the medical aspects of it? How can we create some documentation that would go along with what you said with the broccoli thing? You know, how, where can we find more information on that, of what you eat, who you are, and what happens, because that direct line of how it affects your brain and your choices. How can we do
that? Okay, is there a specific aspect of your coaching that we could focus on to illustrate and amplify that, like a he said, she said? Could you state as a client, a prototype client with that situation, what you might say, just in a sentence or a paragraph or two, and I'll respond as you. Would that be helpful?
Yes, that's perfect.
Okay.
I have a client who said that he can eat anything he wants and he'll still have the energy level. And I don't want to say that that's not the case, but I want to, for that person to be inspired on the belief system that what they eat really is going to affect the way they react.
Okay. Well, remember, we need to resonate with God. Would you draw a circle? Indulge me for a minute. Draw a circle on a clean sheet of paper.
Yes.
Inside that circle, draw a stick figure.
Yes.
Now, that stick figure is the client you just represented. Your challenge as a coach is to get inside that circle, because outside, he's probably not going to listen to you, because what do you have to offer if you offer facts, information, directives, orders, all of that? If he's got Google, he's got way enough information. Information has never changed anyone's mind. If information were enough, some of you have heard me say this before, we'd all have a lot of money for the saved up. We'd, for the future, we'd be thin, we'd eat mostly vegetables, we'd work out every day, and a bunch of librarians would be billionaires. So information is not going to help. So how do you get inside that circle? Possibly the best way is to resonate with that client's experience, to let them know you get, okay, I hear your measure of eating what you want and still feeling energy. Are there other ways that you look at approaching what would be in your best interest in this area in terms of what you eat? And I'd be listening for other metrics. That's a justification, by the way. But you want to listen for, can you get a little bit of reflect? You're doing an empathic resonance, so you get inside the circle. You know, I hear you in some way. I hear that probably is reassuring. But you want to convert a period into a comma. You want to create a collaboration to ask a question. That's the antithesis to all the information, facts, data, whatever, is to ask a question, because there's nothing to agree to or to oppose based on what's already there in that person's brain. You're asking a question for collaboration. So how do you look at an objective then for your eating? How do you decide if it's not, you know, I don't lose any energy when I eat a bunch of Russell Stover chocolate covered cherries? What would that person likely respond if you said, is there a way you want to address how you decide what's in your best interest?
Yes, Yes, that's. I'd like the fact of ask a question also. Thank you. To ask question to the client. And I would ask the client, what other things give you energy?
Okay.
And try to look at those things that give them energy that are healthy and try to empower that mindset of energy through good food.
Okay. So another, thank you. And thanks for that. And see if this helps. What we've described so far in a coaching model is to co-create a story, a beginning, middle, and end, a challenge, a development, resolution in each coaching session. And to get the client to take ownership of that story by determining a focus and a destination, that's the map. So you, in developing that, may want to raise some questions about how someone goes about making decisions. We know a great deal now about the neuroscience of decision making so that we can incorporate this into our coaching. Now, how do you decide what's in your best interest for your nutrition? That's pretty broad, but it goes to what's the decision process to objectify that as much as possible. And if the outcome is, well, I don't feel tired, then you at least have begun and you're getting the person to look at the decision and the outcome. What outcome do you really want? What's your goal? To look at how can you create a system. The system's already there to start with. You're just entering that circle to find out more about what the existing system is and is it working. And remember, we've talked multiple times. If it's working, do more of it. If it doesn't work, do something else. Or if it has a very limited application, you know, that may be, of course, there's no lack of energy because the first few minutes are going to be more energy with those Russell Stover chocolate-covered cherries. You know that's going to be the outcome. But what then? What happens after? What happens next? So how can you help someone self-reflect and look at their own recognition of their needs and what their ideals are to help them co-create a story? I doubt that person is going to be satisfied with that statement that has a little bit of defensiveness built in. That's not what we're about in coaching, but I'm just categorizing that from the sidelines. That's not a plan. That's a statement. Now, how do you go to a plan? How do you then decide what's in your best interest? And to look, if you can, with the client at the system for the focus that they've chosen. They already have a system. They may not be conscious of it, but they have a system. If you can look at the steps with that person, then they can choose any goal they want, and you can help them with that too. You're not ghostwriting a story. You're not running in a play. You're not making suggestions. But you're collaboratively understanding to help the client develop self-empathy, and that's the self-reflection of what they're doing, how they're doing it, does it work or not? Does that make sense, or does it raise more questions about your example?
Wonderful. Oh, this is fantastic. Thank you, David. We do appreciate you. Thank you.
Super. Okay, thanks. Who else? What else? Does anybody else dare after that?
Hi, this is Janet, and I just wanted to touch on what you mentioned at the beginning.
Okay.
When I teach music lessons that just keep making the same mistakes over and over and over, and I think this might even, the creativity might even answer some of the questions that the last person had. But so I'll ask them, what are you doing? How do you practice it? And they go, well, I just do it over and over again, and I just can't get it. And so I'll be like, okay, let's try something completely just different. You're going to think it's really crazy, but just, you know, I have crazy ideas. And so I point to a place at the end of the phrase that they're struggling with, and I said, I want you to read it backwards, and I'll point to the notes as they do it. It's really hard. And I make them do it 3 or 4 times, and then I'm like, okay, now play it forward and see what happens. And so my take home last week was the power is in the focus. And by getting them so focused that they were actually watching the notes and the accidentals and everything, once they started reading it forward, they were doing the same thing. And just like magic, they could play it. And that, it just, I gave them the experience. And I think that sometimes as a coach, if we can give our clients an experience, like dumping it on ourselves, like, this is a really crazy idea, but let's try it and see what happens. and maybe nothing good comes of it, but maybe all of a sudden they're like, well, what about this? Maybe if I tried this, and then they own something and can try it. So, yeah.
That's a great example. And see if this, from the sidebar and the footnote, see if this makes sense to explain this, what you just described, on a basis of neuroscience, and then I want to give you a simple application story. What you described is unlearning and new performance learning. What we know is a habit engages software created for past experience. It can be useful. It can tremendously expedite a default and effortless execution. But if it's no longer useful or outdated, a new behavior pattern needs to be created. You described a very useful way to do that. You take someone out of the flow of their default mode and ask them to look at it, to experience it, really, in a different way. This is the neurochemical way of unlearning. When we unlearn connections and associations, another chemical system process occurs to weaken the connections to the old and outdated stuff, a form of neuroplasticity just in the opposite direction of forward learning. We have to unlearn first. We have to disrupt that default mode. So here are some coaching possibilities for that. Any of these might make a difference. Begin with a question or a story to activate attention and stimulate someone wanting to know what's next. A question engages somebody, not facts, not the old way of doing things. Whatever is new, different, or even surprising energizes, and it immediately captures attention. This is how the brain's already working, to expect patterns, but then there's an error detection mechanism to say, this is not what I expect. So that's attention grabbing. Look at how many rubberneckers slow down traffic with an accident. When they may be asked to address if they're engaging in an old topic, change something about it, even if it's the setting or the application. Anything that will alert that client's brain to something new and different that will enhance attention and productivity. It disrupts. This is script breaking. This is how we break the script for our client. So also, don't start with a review or summary of what's happened before. Our brains minimize and ignore information that's old news. So this is not going to engage or create questions. Frame the new learning as possibility rather than problem. And this is where I would interrupt some. Well, let me tell you about the problem. Let's look at the possibility here, because that's a very different mindset and software program than going down the problem. And you're doing that with your student by creating a disruptor. You break that internal script and do something new and different that initiates new learning, and it also is engaging because we always want to know what happens next. This is what Stephen King said. You know, all an author has to do is keep the reader asking what happens next, because that's the dopamine hit. So we also engage. Our framework is collaborative discussion and involvement. So this is what we're doing together to go someplace new. We help them shrink the change to a next small step for each aspect of their behavior. may look at a different perspective, different modalities. And remember that an immediately, an immensely effective means of creating an emotional connection is through story. Now, I'm not suggesting stories about yourself, but think about how we've talked about throughout this series and see if it's helpful, see if it worked to talk about a story to kind of bring together some things. So here's an example, sort of of an application of this. Ben Fletcher at the University of Hertfordshire in the UK devised a study to get people to break their usual habits. Each day, the subjects picked a different option from polls of contrasting behavior. Each subject picked this or that, lively, quiet, introvert, extrovert, reactive, proactive. They picked one and behaved according to their choice all day long. So an introverted person, for example, would act as an extrovert for an entire day. Additionally, twice weekly, they had to stretch to behave in a way outside their usual pattern. They would eat something twice a week that they had never eaten before. They would read something twice a week that they would have never read before. So, after 4 months, what do you think the major change in this group was? Any guesses? Those of you who haven't read me before, take a guess. Any guesses? After 4 months, the subjects on average lost 11 pounds. 6 months later, they had all kept the weight off and most continued to lose. Now, the researchers were baffled initially. It wasn't a study of requiring people to change routine behavior and think about decisions, or it wasn't about food or weight or dieting, so they were baffled about how people lost weight. What they came to discover is this shift, I think in the example Janet gave too as a related aspect, the shift caused them to think about the choice that was just an automatic default mode before. So each thing they ate, they began to think about their eating. They most came to look at each bite to ask, is this bite in my best interest? So they became consciously aware of making choices, of how they automatically made choices, but it was moved to the foreground of being a specific, focused, conscious choice. So it began to be informed by more of what they felt was in their best interest. So this is one of the things that we do in coaching to help someone be more aware of the choices they're making, and then they may naturally, or with a little prompt from us, look at, does this fit with exactly what you want? How's this working? So remember the Dr. Phil question. How's that working for you? We can use that too, in a way. I mean, with a genuine and authentic interest, and be curious together. How's that working? Is there a way that you would like to look together at improving that? So I think that's illustrative, sort of in the same ballpark of what Janet's talking about, of really being a catalyst to learning in a different way, and it requires a focused attention to not repeat the same pattern. Sometimes it can be an unfocus occurs in the brain to make room for a new focus. Sometimes that can occur automatically. Sometimes it needs to be addressed. So just got 2 or 3 minutes, even our extra time. Other thoughts or questions or things you'd like to add or ask?
Yeah, Dave, this is Rosemary.
Are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing great.
Good. I'll tell you, this is really great. I'm just getting started in coaching, because I've been, like you, a psychotherapist for many, many years.
Okay.
But I'm sitting here listening, and the first question, and you suggested, you know, getting inside the circle with the client and all of that. And I think about, would that work with somebody who is allowing others, outside influences, to block them from making progress? And then you said, remember Dr. Phil's question, how's that working for you? So I think you kind of answered it, but I had to sit here and chuckle because I do that a lot in counseling. I ask them, how's that working for you? So,
well, it may be, I think the answer to that is yes, and let me elaborate just a bit more, because you're hearing that someone is abandoning themselves, abandoning their own point of reference to fit into what someone else wants. So that experience may be a place to begin, that I hear you at times moving away from what you want to fit into what someone else wants. What's that experience like for you? Or then how do you decide to do that? And listen for framing, because this is so important, because how we frame something determines the mindset that we use to boot up to process the remainder of that whole scenario. And a simple example here is when somebody asks you to do something and you agree to, even though you don't want to do it and you kind of grudgingly agree to do it, you know, how do you decide for a request to say no or to say yes? So that system may be cast in bold relief. For example, when someone says yes, when they really don't want to, they're agreeing, but then what's the price that they pay? They're abandoning themselves. They fit into, is it really getting them what they want? Or, and, when someone asks them to do something, if they frame no as if it were guilt, you know, I should be doing this, I feel guilty if I don't, so I'll say yes and just, you know. No framed as guilt boots up a particular mindset. So it's, you know, Carl Menninger said, save guilt for real sin. You ain't done nothing wrong yet. So think about how framing no in a different way might allow one to stick more with their game plan. No simply means I have a plan. I'm taking care of myself. I appreciate your offer, but I don't have time right now to do that. Two very different ways to proceed based on framing and simply a reference of what no means. If it's based on your own story, your own needs, it gets easier and easier, and then you can truly consider not abandoning yourself to fit into what somebody else wants, but developing your own story. Now, where that's going to really come into play, look at how that will affect your clients, those of you who are parents. You're writing the script for a model that your kids are downloading every day. They're unconsciously taking notes. What's the model that you're creating? As a coach, if you establish 50 minutes as a session and then go over 10 or 15 minutes, lousy model, that's not going to work in the real world. If they get to their monthly credit card payment or monthly rent and they say, well, I'll just let it, that ain't going to work in the real world. So do what a model is that will work in the real world. If it doesn't work in the real world to have a fit and get what you want, then, or do something and have somebody rescue you, then it shouldn't work in coaching. So we're always establishing a model, both with empathic resonance with the client as well as how we consider everything that we do to be objective, to be empathic, and to really develop an effective way of proceeding step by simple step.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I appreciate it, because I'm still just trying to figure out what direction to go with all this coaching. But I see a lot of creativity in coaching, but giving it off to the individual and not trying to just tell them what to do. I like that.
Yeah, if you ever find yourself working a little bit too hard, give it back to the client. And I really tout the value of mentor coaching. When I made my transition, I worked with a mentor coach who had made the same transition, a person who was really well known for her work in the mental health field and had made a total transition as I did. And that mentor coaching during my training was at least as important as my training itself. First of all, she helped me clean up my language to move from a therapy and an analytic language to coaching. But it's a different framework. It's its own body of knowledge, tools, methods, principles. I think it's very, very effective. I would say more effective, faster, more efficiently than therapy and analysis. So thank you all very much. If there are any things that we didn't cover, fire me an email. If I can be of help to you in any additional way, I hope you'll let me know. Thanks for attending. Thanks for all of your input and interaction. I value that, and I hope you got what you hoped for, maybe a little bit more. So I'll be eager to hear from you. Thanks very, very much.
Thank
you. See you guys. Bye.
Great.
Now.
Dave.
See
you.
Thank you. Yeah, you're totally
Take
welcome.
Care now.
See ya.
Right. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.